broadcasting from Melbourne, Victoria. You're listening to the Investor Exchange. Tune in each week and listen to the guys from United Global Capital discuss the topics that matter the most to your finances. Each episode will help you separate the noise from what really matters, giving you timely and actionable information you can use. We'll cover areas related to financial markets, property, politics, personal finance, and the economy. Now, here's your host, Stephanie Sumner.
And a very good morning. It's your host, Stephanie Sumner, and happy Friday to all our listeners, and happy Friday in the studio here, guys.
Yay.
Hello.
Another week gone.
Oh, another Ooh. Week gone. Now, we're actually missing Joel today. He's off in Sydney. Has had his plaster cast removed, which is good because his arms were starting to smell.
Yep.
But look, it's just the three of us this morning. But
Well, we've got a bit of a trend going. So, Louis, you must be away next week.
I can be if you'd like.
2 weeks, well, I had 2 weeks ago, Steph, last yep. week, Joel today.
There you go.
And Louis, you're off camping, aren't you?
Later on today, I'll be taking off camping, going with my four-year-old daughter.
Oh, that'll be interesting.
It will be interesting.
Yeah, has she gone camping before?
No, she is very excited. She has no idea.
How does she handle the heat?
She's fine.
Okay.
Yeah. Yep. She just gets sweaty and complains for a moment, and then the next moment she's running around or
just give her
riding
a distraction.
A bike.
Yep.
Yeah.
And we should add, this is your wife's birthday present to you. Send you away with your daughter camping.
Oh, she's not coming.
No, she's not coming, and
smart
it is my
woman.
Birthday tomorrow, so she'll be much happier if she's not camping.
Yep.
And I'll be much happier camping if she's not there.
Yeah. It's a bit of father-daughter bonding. Yeah. So, that's lovely.
Well, that too. Yeah.
Yeah, that's yep. nice. And speaking of sort of camping and certainly hot weather, last night I flew back from Townsville. I was just going to give you a bit of an update there.
Yeah.
I've been shooting a bit of a documentary up there on the Townsville floods. Pretty incredible sight to see in some of those regions and some of those areas with how badly impacted those houses were and the local community as well. And it's certainly interesting to see how many insurance claims are starting to come out of that. And
well,
yeah.
I was aware that you were up there, and I had a look. And there was an article, so this is a week old, and obviously, Steph, there's more to hear from mm-hmm. you, but I just thought, whilst you're talking about the insurance claims, the Deputy Premier of Queensland has sort of put a pledge or a pleading out there to the North Queensland, or to the insurers and the banks, to say, let's be good corporate citizens and help these people out, mm-hmm. because up until, I think it was the 13th of February, there had been 13,000 insurance claims for over $165 million. So that's
wow.
still 2 weeks ago. So wow. it's probably increased significantly since then.
Yeah, yeah. it's just been a massive cleanup effort. And mm. I mean, really to go up there now, I would have thought they would have been well underway with the cleanup, but it's still going on. There's families still displaced and in staying in hotels. It was very hard to get a hotel up there. And, you know, people are certainly very emotional about what's happening up there. And but they're rallied together as a really great community. And, you know, I think Queenslanders are pretty good like that. They mm. really offer some great support. So,
well, they're probably getting used to it in some capacity.
Yeah,
it
I know.
Every
it's
every year
one.
there's
yeah.
a cyclone or a drought or something yep. that's hurting them.
Mm. Yep.
Somewhere in that yeah. far north Queensland.
It's
area.
A very vulnerable weather spot.
Mm.
And particularly, I mean, Melbourne's, I think it's 80 kilometres, isn't it, out of Melbourne. We've got some fires as well. I mean, it's so dry here.
Yeah.
We definitely are a country that really has some weather
yeah.
disasters. So.
Well, that coastline, you know, if you look from Melbourne to that far north Queensland, it's roughly 4,000 kilometres. It's a fair
yeah.
expanse of land.
That's right. I mean, we're a big country.
Yeah.
You look at the south of Europe compared to the north of Europe, and it's extreme differences.
Mm.
Same thing,
same
but
thing.
We're just one
Our
country
own continent.
Instead of... however many countries in the EU.
So, Steph, how widespread was it? Like, Townsville is sort of the hub of where all the damage was this
Townsville
time?
Was mostly affected.
Yeah.
I think there's an area in there called, and I always stuff the name up, Idalia.
Sounds right.
Which is a very low-lying area in Townsville itself, and that was the worst impacted by the floods. They've got a shopping centre that we went out to visit, and it is just completely just empty. There's just no shops open. If you drive around that suburb, you can see that people are still pulling out mattresses, and really sad to see like mm. children's toys out on the nature strip. I mean, their whole life has just been displaced. It's just
wow.
awful.
And that shopping centre would be what, the only one to service that whole local community?
Well, I mean, there would be others further out, but just particularly that community, yes.
Yeah.
So, you know, they've set up a mobile post store and other bits and pieces, but you can really see that it's just been absolutely devastating. So.
Did you see any of the plans they have or the way way they go about, you know, obviously keeping hygiene in place? How do they feed themselves through this period of time?
Yeah, I mean, the local services, like the army, were out in force. I didn't actually see this, but they were door knocking and providing food. And, you know, there's counsellors up there. And, you know, there's all sorts of support that they're providing that local community. They really, they've done it well. And as you say, I suppose they're used to disasters like that. And just the local community just lending a hand and actually going out to their neighbours and starting to help pull out, you know, mattresses. And, you know, they've been using vinegar to get rid of the mould. Vinegar was in really hot demand because they just couldn't get enough of it. Because that just, they're using it on the walls to sort of clear the mould off. So it's it's pretty remarkable. But
Well, and you wonder how much, so obviously, yeah, that's the mould component, but what about the other wood rot or anything that might happen from all this damage?
I don't actually know about that part of it, but I mean, that would be a huge issue. I know that there was certainly some kind of a disease that was in the mud that had been really a problematic for them as well. So it's all the other things that you sort of have to think about. It's not just that a flood comes through, it's the aftermath that's the really hard part.
Yeah, because when the floods come, it's not just water there that you've got to wait to drain, it's the silt or the mud that comes with it that's sticks around.
And the cleanup effort must have been just so intense of trying to scrape mud off your walls and your place. So, yeah, and a lot of them in that particular estate, the Adalia, they're new houses. So I'm assuming that they'd be so young families that have got their dream home and everything's sort of been wiped out instantly.
It'd
be pretty hard.
That's a big cleanup.
And you'll probably find that a lot of those are just written off by the insurance companies. Might just be a knockdown job, because if there's moulds or things getting into the structural parts of the house, I know that even if a fire comes through a place, even though there might still be some structure remaining, just the structural damage means that it can't be built on again. And with a mould problem particularly, you might just need to knock the whole thing down.
So true. So I guess that comes back to your insurance topic, but you might be able to provide some advice, Brett, on... You know, do you read the fine print? How thorough should we all be being with
Knowing what most insurers are like, they'd probably have a clause in there. Well, they'd try to have a clause in there to try and avoid having to compensate, especially when it's of this magnitude. Like, that's going to hurt them, and it's probably going to have a knock-on effect, you know, like all of these natural disasters do, with premiums going up, because the insurers, even though they, you know, they're there to try and help you, overall they're a business, so they're going to factor in that they need to make their margins, and it's going to hit premiums down the track. But hopefully the people in these areas have policies that do cover them for these types of events. I would assume that, you know, people getting insured in this area would do, because it's likely to happen at some point in time, but who knows, if they really didn't go about getting their insurance done properly, they could be vulnerable.
There's going to be some.
Yeah,
there's going
to be
some. I mean, if you, every time you take a group of 1,000 people, you're going to have some that make a mistake.
Yeah, and may not even be insured.
May not be insured. May have insurance where they think it's for flood, but it's not for flood. I do know that insurance disclosures are better than what they were. So it's not one 6-point font sentence you're looking for to say floods are excluded. It is usually in bold, flood is not included in this policy, or some other way of clearly disclosing, because the insurers have been dragged over the coals about this kind of thing before, many times before. Same with bushfires. Same part of the argument here is whether it's considered flood or whether it's considered stormwater.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
and I don't know what the difference is.
Yeah.
What is the difference?
I think that happened particularly in Brisbane with the last floods that came through. That was a really big issue.
Yeah, it was. It was. So you get some policies where flood is covered and stormwater is not. You get some policies where stormwater is covered but flood is not. You just got to look out.
So should we be shopping around as well? Do you think it's important to shop around and sort of, you know, hear from a few insurers before you make a decision, or what's the best steps?
Look, I think it's important to shop around, and if you don't want to look at the fine print, then put it onto a broker of some kind to give you insurance advice, which is not expensive. I kept a home and contents insurance policy for a good 7 or 8 years through a broker. They added a 10% margin on a $500 a year policy. So I was only paying $550 a year for an insurance cover. And when the renewal came up every year, I couldn't remember what it covered. And I was like, oh, does this cover the thing? And they emailed back saying, yes, it does. And I'm like, great. Which then also means I've got it in writing from them that they're saying it's covered. So even if I haven't read the product disclosure statement myself, I've got the broker putting it in their words that yes, you are covered for this, or no, you're not covered for this, and you've got it in writing from them, and then it's potentially, if they're wrong, well then there's a potential claim against them if the insurance company doesn't cover it.
That's an interesting one. That's something that, I mean, certainly if I lived in an area like that, it's probably best to actually get a broker in there to read it, because often it can be so complex.
Oh, I love brokers for insurance.
Yeah,
because it is so complex. And trying to find that one line in a 20-page document that says flood is not covered, and then if you don't find it, is it not there, or have I just not found it?
Yeah, that's so
like
true.
Just get a broker who understands the policies, and you've got the security that you're covered.
Yeah, and talking about all things being covered for things that go wrong, Brett, you're going to talk a little bit about the fairness fund that the Royal Commission set up.
Can I? Yeah, look, I will. Can I just come back to what Lou was saying there? Because the article I referenced earlier about the volume of claims, it actually basically says exactly what Louis did just then.
Yes!
It talks about...
I'm right.
So the Deputy Premier, how she was asking for the banks and insurers to be good corporate citizens. There's some quotes in here. It says that one of the people that represents the ICA Chief Executive Officer, Rob Whelan, has said that he's explained that flood insurance cover is readily available to all householders and builders in Townsville.
Right.
So it's readily available. So it's not like the insurers aren't going to offer it. And they say the cover is risk rated the same as in any other part of Australia. Customers who decided against purchasing flood cover or chose to opt out should still lodge a claim through their insurer or insurance broker. Most policies include storm cover.
Storm cover, okay. So but I mean, then it's how they decipher what that really is. That's the grey area, right?
Yeah. And then he goes on to say, you know, a bit more about that. It says that where flood cover was not purchased, it would typically be tested by the insurer through an independent hydrology process.
Okay.
So it sounds like most of the people in the area, you know, should definitely speak to a broker or lodge a claim regardless of what policy they've got and go through the process. And
yeah, why wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Yep, yeah. Absolutely you should, because you don't never know how those experts are going to come back. And they will probably draw a map with a line across one area where they say one side is stormwater and the other side is flood. And your neighbour might be different to you. Yep. You just don't know where the line is.
Gee, wouldn't you hate the neighbour across there?
Well, they've probably got the other insurance policy.
Yeah.
You'd hope so.
Well, look, I guess good luck to all those people. You know, hopefully the area gets looked after. I guess the one upside in all this, if you do look for a silver lining, if a lot of these houses are demolished, that does mean that there'll be some jobs in the near future for builders and people.
Oh, you could
to
see
rebuild.
It up there already.
Yeah.
Certainly, even with the earthworks that they were, you know, taking all the stuff to the tips and you know, turning the soil and all sorts of jobs that are coming off the back of that.
So. Yeah. So I guess there's a silver lining in that respect.
Yeah.
Yeah, so what you referred to before, Steph. So this is not a guarantee yet. It's an election promise from the opposition that they will introduce what they're going to call a fairness fund or a banking fairness fund. So in the wake of the Royal Commission, they pledged that they would raise $160 million per year from Australia's biggest banks. And that would be in order to... Sorry, let me just find my point here.
It's not a new tax.
Not a new tax, no.
Can't call it a tax.
Aim to support victims of misconduct. So a lot of those people that have fallen victim to the misconduct from all of the banks and financial service companies that have had financial loss would be in line for compensation. I think it's a great thing because at the moment, most other industries, I know in real estate, you know, if you're a real estate agent, there's all funds that are held in trust. The interest that's earned out of real estate agents' trust accounts goes towards a fund for compensation. And I know some other industries have a fund for compensation, so it's probably fair and reasonable that the biggest banking industry has a fairness sinking fund as well.
Does it say how they've, I mean, when to lodge the claims, how does it all work?
Oh, no, it's purely a pledge to build
to
this
do
fund.
It, yeah.
Yeah, and obviously it won't happen unless they're elected. It's obviously with election campaigns ramping up, this is one of their promises.
Yeah, we're still waiting for them to actually call the election.
Yeah. Yeah, not sure when that'll be. So that's the opposition's plan for this. What the current Liberal government will do, I'm not sure yet.
I love that. And what it will do is it means that if you have a claim against a bank, currently you have to try and sue them or prove some kind of misconduct or wrongdoing.
Yep.
And if you're successful, then the expense hits the bank. What this is doing is the government is forcing the banks to cop the expense now, and then they say, oh, well, we've already paid the money into this fund, so we don't mind if people claim on it. Go ahead and claim on it, because yeah. we've already copped the expense.
Yeah, the funds are there.
So it's a complete mindset shift for the banks, which means they shouldn't try to fight as hard, because it's not someone suing them, which then hits their bottom line. If the suing is successful, it's already hit their bottom line.
Yeah. I wouldn't want to take part in trying to do that. That will be a messy process trying to wade through all of that.
Look, it will be a messy process, but it is an improvement.
Absolutely.
Definitely.
Do you think that you know, the Royal Commission, has it put pressure on the financial advice industry and property, and, you know, does it cause scrutiny for you guys as well, do you think?
I think we were probably not tarred with the same brush as a lot of the others. Like, AMP were the ones that really got dragged over the coals, and then obviously it was the big banks and their advice arms that were... They run their businesses so differently because, you know, they've got products that they're selling straight from their own bank, and they're incentivized to only sell what they've got on offer, whereas we're so independent that we're looking after our clients' best interests and we're not biased or you know, commission driven by any of that stuff.
Do you think people will start actually looking at smaller companies and sort of being steered towards that?
Well, I hope so, and I'd recommend they at least explore that.
Yep. There has always been a problem with the level of competency of financial planners in banks, not because of the people, but because of the tools at their disposal and the way that they were incentivized. So I used to get frustrated when someone would say, I went and saw a financial planner at the bank, and I was like, oh, okay, so I guess they told you to roll over your super into their product and take some investments, which is their product. What did they actually tell you about super contributions, saving tax, growing your wealth, reducing your debts? And they're like, oh, not very much. They just wanted to sort of do the super and do the investment, and that was it. And it's not because the planner doesn't have the skills. It's that the planner didn't have the incentive to add those other areas of advice to actually deliver a benefit to client.
What's that saying, that to a man with a hammer, all they see is a nail? It's like, well, if you've only got one option, that's all you can ever push.
Yeah, yep,
and
yep,
unfortunately,
very much so.
With the big banks, that was all those advisors really had, was these options.
Yep. So the banks have to change their model, and a lot of them are just selling out.
Right.
They're just exiting the industry. So it has had a big impact on the larger players in the financial planning space.
Yep.
It's also had a big impact on the very few independent financial advisors that have absolutely been doing the wrong thing. There was a great example of one who fronted the Royal Commission and wasn't making the right disclosures.
I remember that,
Wasn't providing his advice in the correct way, wasn't disclosing that the investment he was promoting was an investment that he was an owner on, an owner of. So didn't tell clients it was a related entity. So there are people at the margin who were greatly affected, as they should be.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I think it's been great for the industry, the whole Royal Commission.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep.
And, well, great for the consumer, in effect.
Great for the consumer, yeah. I've heard a lot of financial planners saying things, but it hasn't really affected most of them. Where I hear it more is the product providers who we meet with, who we do business through. They're the ones saying, well, post-Royal Commission, we can't really do this. We need to change to that.
Well, certainly as a consumer, it makes me feel a little bit more comfortable that it's being watched a lot closer. I mean, it really is. You're playing with people's life, so it's a big deal.
And I still hope that they don't implement the fee-for-service on mortgage brokers and ban the commissions there, because I just think too many people will avoid mortgage brokers because they can go straight to the bank and they're probably not going to get the best guidance.
No, not at all. Again, Labor have a proposal not to ban the commissions, but to flatten the commissions.
That's ideal.
Yep. Where currently the mortgage broker will get maybe 20% extra by putting a customer with one bank versus another bank.
Okay.
And what Labor are proposing is just making
same
it
fee.
A flat rate.
Yep.
So Bank A pays the same as Bank B.
Yeah, that's good.
Which is something that has happened in the life insurance and disability insurance space. Mm. Again, there was not as big a difference, but maybe a 10 or 15% difference from one insurer to another. And that's been flattened for the past, oh, what is it, 2 years now.
Right. Mm. And no complaints out of that industry on how it went down? Because, I mean, that's a big change in the way that, that people are conducting there.
Well, yes, lots of complaints, because what they did with insurance at the same time is they lowered the amount.
Right.
So they didn't actually say we're going to flatten it. What they said is we're going to lower it, so everyone needs to come down, and it's a maximum of this. And because it was below what everyone's paying, then they just lowered it to the new maximum.
Mm. Obviously, it's settled.
It's settled, and I mean for us, it's business as usual. Yeah. Anyway. Yeah.
Good one. Mm. All right. Well, we're going to just take a very short break, and we'll be back after this message.
Want to learn the strategies that have achieved returns more than double the return of the average superannuation fund? Each day, clients of United Global Capital are using strategies and tactics that were once thought the domain of the professional investor or the super rich. Book your seat at UGC's Financial Fast Track Seminars, where you'll learn the science behind selecting high-performance stocks and real estate, how you can participate in advanced strategies like property development, short selling, and international investments, as well as how to protect your wealth against major adverse market events. To secure your seat, simply go to ugc.net.au/events and select the seminar that suits your needs. Seats are limited, so book your spot now.
Okay, and welcome back, guys. We're now going to move on to another topic that Brett's got today, and that's talking about the infamous Opal Tower.
Yes. So this was quite a sad story at the beginning. Obviously, the timing was shocking. It was Christmas Eve. For anyone that doesn't remember, Opal Tower was the residential tower based in Sydney in the Olympic Park area that had cracking, and you know there was concerns of it may even fall down on people, so people had to evacuate on Christmas Eve, which is a terrible time to have to be moving out of your own brand new property. So 2 months later, the engineers and the consultants have gone through the building and had a good look at it and started to give a report as to what caused it and what the likely future could be. And it's not as bad as first thought. I mean, yes, it is definitely a problem, but they've identified what the reasoning was. And so they've been able to review it, and they've said that the investigation found that the critical hob beams in the residential tower were prone to cracking due to their structural design. So there was a design flaw, which was exacerbated because of the use of a lower strength concrete. So it was a kind of a two-pronged thing that led to it. What they have found, though, is that probably what triggered it was because the building was so new, as more and more people were entering and starting to occupy the premises, that load bearing that they were putting on it finally triggered the weakness to come about, and therefore the cracking. So unfortunately, there's still, you know, roughly a third of the people that should be in that building still not able to live in it. But they have identified that overall the building is structurally sound. And the localized damage, which they've identified is, you know, where these beams and concrete were weak, can be repaired without, you know, any reason to demolish or have concerns about the overall integrity of the building.
Which is great. But I still wouldn't buy in there. I mean, that's agreed. The thing. It would lower the value regardless, because I wouldn't want to touch it at all.
And it'll have that stigma for quite some time.
I think it will have it forever.
Yeah.
You know, anyone that's sort of grown up with it will know about that building. And yeah. I mean, it would still be very devastating for an owner to have that kind of thing happen. So.
Yeah. Well, and this article doesn't reference, you know, exactly who's going to pay for the remediation.
Yeah.
You know, who's going to fix, you know, obviously they've found that they can fix it and rectify it, but it's still a matter of who pays. So I'm not sure how that'll play out.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Yeah.
Surely the builder took an insurance policy.
Well, they would have to.
Going back to insurance again.
Yep.
Then again, does the insurance policy cover the fact that the structural design wasn't good and they used an inferior concrete? So there's, yeah.
Well,
not sure how that would play
think
out.
I would think the insurer has to pay, but then the insurer could pursue damages against a builder.
And maybe the engineering.
Maybe the engineering.
Design.
Yep, that's right. Which are probably companies that don't exist anymore.
Yeah, more than likely.
Because when they build a property development, they start a company, and then when the property is completed, they take the insurances that are necessary, but then the company gets wound down and there's no assets left in the company.
Although with this one, I would say that's probably not likely, just given the nature. Well, most of the time, big buildings like this, or ones with high volumes of dwellings, it takes them a good 6 months or so to settle every purchase.
Right.
So that company has to stay open whilst the settlements come through and all the things. So a lot of the time they can't wind up the company that did the project for at least 6, sometimes 12 months after the project's completed. So I would say this one would still be alive.
Right. Well, there you go.
So how that plays out, I'm not sure. But I would say the residents should, and the owners that have bought in there, should be at least in a building that they can continue to occupy, no long-term consequences. Obviously, the stigma for resale is going to be there for a while, but they should still be able to have a livable residence without any concerns.
I'd kind of be scared to enter it at the moment.
Yeah, I guess you'd want to see the report.
Yeah.
And you know, there's bound to be a meeting of the owners' corp in some capacity that would outline all the rectification that's happening and give them the comfort they need.
Yep.
But the engineers that have released this report and done the research are very highly qualified and credible.
Yeah.
So if it's coming from the best source around, it has to give you some level of comfort. Mm.
Once they let people back in, surely you would have some faith.
Bringing up another topic, I know this is a little bit off topic, but what about the road signs that have fallen over the Tullamarine Freeway of late? The second one came down.
Oh, really?
Another one.
Another one. So they've had two now.
Oh, my goodness.
And you would think that they would have rectified that as well. And,
would think.
Well, because the first one flattened a car, basically.
Yeah, I don't know much about the second one, but I would have thought they would have gone and done their testing as well, and that's just, you'd hope that with this particular tower, they've done all their research on it.
So do we know whether it's the signage, like the directional signage, or is it some advertising signage, or possibly...
No, it was the actual road
the directional
sign. Yeah, the directional sign. So imagine that falling on your
car. One of the big green ones.
Mm. Yeah.
Wow. Second one.
So whoever the contractor is that supplied that didn't use enough, probably a similar thing.
Yeah, that's
inferior
right.
Inferior materials or bad engineering.
Yeah, it just shows how badly something can turn if you're not checking and dotting your I's and crossing your T's with things.
So. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, the engineers that do a lot of this construction, they're brilliant in a lot of ways with how they can make designs structurally sound, but I guess it's a matter of making sure that that's done appropriately, but then the materials do make sense too.
Yeah, of course.
Have you heard anything more too about the combustible cladding in the other buildings that you had discussed in an earlier podcast heard anything more on that?
It's just going to be an ongoing scenario. No major updates, but definitely there's more and more buildings that are being investigated, more and more negotiations with owners' corps and insurers and others as to how they can remediate or rectify for the minimal expense, so it doesn't hurt too many of the owners. But it's definitely something that the local councils and the building industry are still working through, because there's a lot of variables. Like even now, there's apparently, with new buildings being constructed to try and make sure this doesn't happen in future, there's only a few suppliers of cladding materials that have been approved to a certain code.
Mm.
And there needs to be a lot more, because the cost, obviously, if you're one of the few suppliers, you've almost got like a mini monopoly.
Yeah, right.
So the cost can be exorbitant. So it still needs to have a lot more work through before it normalises and settles.
Wow.
But yeah, I don't really have any other material information at this point.
Good one. So we're now going to throw over to Louis. He's going to speak to us about step 5, and that is discussing your expenses.
That's right. So listeners, in the last 4 episodes, I've been talking about how you can get your finances in order. Week 1, I was talking about tracking your income against your expenses over the last 12 months. Then I was talking about restructuring and refinancing your debts and making some immediate savings there. Step 3, I was talking about negotiating your income, because your income is one of the biggest determinants of whether you'll be financially successful or not. Step 4, last week, I said, well, let's use that extra income and the savings from restructuring your debts to automate some savings, so that you've got money every week going straight into a bank account without you even thinking about it, and you have a savings habit. So what's next? I've got a few things still to go, a few steps still up my sleeve to make you fully feel like you are in control of your finances.
Oh, do tell.
Oh, well, I'll just go into one today, and that is on the expenses side. So look, what you've done is you've reduced some expenses by restructuring your debts, you've increased your income, and you've started your savings from those extra things you've done. Now let's do some more. Let's look at your everyday expenses. And the big one for me is your monthly bills.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I don't want to target your grocery spending. I don't want to target your discretionary spending, because I'm trying to do things here to sort out your finances in a way that doesn't impact your lifestyle. So I'm not here to tell you to eat baked beans on toast every night. Keep doing your regular things, but I'm talking about those bills that you pay month in, month out without thinking about it. Because as long as you continue to not think about it, those bills will go up and up and up compared to those people who do pay attention and look at better deals.
So things like utilities and...
Utilities, phone plans, insurances.
Yep.
So, if you have not changed your private health insurance provider...
Ooh, I haven't.
...in the last 2 years, mm-hmm. it's worth having a good look.
Okay.
But you know what's interesting is you can often just call your existing provider and say, look, guys, I am looking at other insurance companies that are in the market right now. What is it that you could do for me before I start looking?
Right. Mm. I did hear something on the news, and I did only caught the tail end of this, but with your health insurance, there were some people getting together as a collective group of people and negotiating the terms on a large group of people that wanted to have insurance for the, with that company.
Yep.
Is that something that you would recommend?
Oh, absolutely, if you can get the same terms and get it at a lower cost. Yeah, no problem.
Yep.
No problem.
Well, I had a similar issue with... My father's been a Foxtel subscriber for like 20 years, and his neighbour signed up fairly recently and got a package in a deal that was almost half the price of my dad's for what seemed to be the same.
Oh, you're kidding.
So I said, well, Dad, just get on the phone. And yeah. and they wouldn't. They said, oh, no, your existing subscriber's not open to you. And he says, all right, we'll cancel it. And then they finally said, oh, okay, we'll now give it to you.
Yeah, yeah.
So these phone calls can be very valuable.
Yep, yep. And I've heard Foxtel in particular has been hemorrhaging customers for quite some time. So that is one provider particularly that is very keen to keep people
absolutely.
On their books
yep.
Instead of losing customers.
Mm. Makes sense.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, with Netflix and everything else coming on, they've had to be more competitive.
Yep.
Yep. Mm. Yep, that's right. So the easiest thing to do, changing anything does require a fair bit of effort. So the easiest thing to do is to call your current provider and say, look, I'm thinking about changing. Before I explore other companies, what can you do for me to reduce my costs?
Yeah.
And if they're helpful, well, then great. You might have just saved yourself a couple of $100 in one phone call.
Mm. Louis, what about the comparison websites that you can sometimes view? I know there's some that are biased or owned by some of the companies.
They make it easy as well.
Yep.
So go ahead and use comparison websites or actual brokers. So comparison websites are brokers.
Yep.
They just do everything through their online platform. So you're not getting a human behind it to really understand your needs. Some of them have some pretty good questionnaires to get some detailed information, and then a pretty good way to compare the detail of one against the detail of another. Mm. So that's going to work well for people who are detail-oriented, but maybe not work so well for people who don't like paying attention to the detail.
Yeah, yeah.
The people who get caught out without their flood cover.
Yeah, right.
And that's where you might prefer to speak to someone or get on the phone to different insurance companies and get an assurance that, yes, it does cover this, yes, it does cover that.
What about when I'm getting calls from utility companies saying, oh, I've got this great deal for you, and I think, oh, not another telemarketer.
Yep.
Should I be comparing that or just avoid it?
Oh.
You know, you say, just call back at 5:30, and you think, I'm not going to answer your phone call.
if you can get good information and a clear comparison.
Mm.
And they're going to try and make their deal sound amazing.
Right.
And they're going to ask you, well, how much are you paying right now and what's your usage right now? And they're going to promise a certain amount of cost savings, but it's not necessarily going to be delivered.
So it's better to do your own research.
It is better to do your own research, yes.
And those people on the phone, they're only going to compare what you're currently paying with what they've got. They're not going to tell you about any others that could be better.
Mm. Yep. They're also not going to tell you about all the deals available with that certain company.
Mm.
So I've had those telemarketing calls, I've looked at the deal they've had, and then I've gone to that energy company's website.
Oh, you're better on that.
And there's plan number one, but there's also plan number two and plan number three, and plan number four is an online-only special plan.
Oh, okay.
It's like, oh, well, that is clearly better than plan number one, so, you know, screw the telemarketer, and then I'm going to look at plan number one. Oh, but if I am changing provider, well, then what do other providers have? So, yes, absolutely, it's worth doing your own research.
Yeah. Just on energy as well, I'll just add, because I've got some very recent experience with this myself, having moved house recently and having to sign up to a new provider, I went to one of the comparison sites, but they had, and they have a disclaimer at the bottom, that there's 20 providers, they only deal with 10 or so.
Yep.
And the Victorian government have actually got their own that's totally independent, unbiased, and has them all, and I found it gave me the best deal I could find. Well, it didn't give me, it directed me towards who to contact.
Right.
I found that one very good. So anyone looking at cheaper energy, may have to Google which is the Victorian government's comparison site.
That's really good advice,
Yep, excellent. Because there has been a lot of consumer protection issues around the telemarketing of energy plans and the door knocking of energy plans. Mm. And actually, my brother and sister-in-law were caught out by a door knocker who wouldn't leave them alone until they signed up for a plan. And then they called up later to cancel the plan and they said, okay, we'll cancel it. And they didn't cancel it. Caused all sorts of issues.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yep. You've got to be careful.
Absolutely. So,
I found the website, compare.energy.vic.gov.au. There we go.
Awesome. Thank you, Brett. That's great. Do the same thing with your utilities. Do it with your private health insurance. Do it with your phone company. Phone companies are really good at coming out with new deals every year to try and attract new customers, and it's the old ones that miss out. So, even if you don't get a reduction in your costs, you might get a plan with more data, because our data tends to go up every year, and you're still getting a plan that is better for you, and you might not need to change your providers.
Yep.
But then if you do need to change providers, these days it is a lot easier, still a bit of a hassle, but it is a lot easier to change your phone provider now than it was a few years ago. Same with your energy provider.
Yep.
You just tell your new energy provider, yep, I want you to do it, and they'll be the ones to close down your old account.
Yep.
And internet as well, I would imagine.
Internet, that's right.
Yep.
Anything that has a monthly or yearly payment, car insurance, home insurance, these companies in particular have discounts that can be applied.
Mm, that's great advice, and thanks for the homework, Louis.
Once you've done that, you'll be saving, you could potentially save thousands of dollars each year on doing this, which is money that can be better directed to other things, which I'll talk about next week.
Very good.
Looking forward to that one. That sounds like a good topic. And just to follow up and finalise the podcast for today, we're throwing to our favourite topic, You Can't Be Serious.
Woo!
Now, I know you've both got one, but who wants to start?
Well, I'll start. I was reminded of this with what Brett was saying about the Opal Towers, how the building was built and it looked all fine, but once the weight of people and their contents went into the building, then it started to suffer. This is decades old, but the University of California in LA, this is UCLA, they built a whiz-bang new amazing library. And it was this huge architectural phenomenon. And it was made a huge deal of it, had a grand opening. They forgot to account for the weight of the books. They forgot.
You cannot be serious!
The architects and engineers didn't account that there was about 2 tons worth of books that had to be shelved in this library. And they just said, well, we can't put that in there. Like, the thing's going to fall down.
Wow. Don't use that, engineer.
No. Nice timing.
Yeah.
Well, let's stay in America. Louis, I know you lived in America.
I did.
I lived in America for a period of time. Steph, you've travelled there, I believe.
Many times. I wish I'd lived there.
It's a nice country. But one of the things I found was that a lot of the Americans I met over my travels over there were quite insulated from the rest of the world. They only sort of knew about their local area or their country, and they really didn't have a broader understanding of the rest of the world, whether that's because of the news or just the way they choose to live. But this one I found was quite amusing. Obviously, with Trump being over negotiating with North Korea at the moment, Jimmy Kimmel on his late night show has a segment called Lie Witness News.
Lie Witness.
And the concept behind it is that he goes out there and they just put something fake out there and get people to basically respond to it as if they already know about it. So they're lying through their teeth. And the most recent one he did was that President Trump has signed a landmark agreement to annex North Korea as the 51st state of the union.
You cannot be serious!
And I happened to watch the little YouTube video of this. So the people that they were getting to respond to this, they were asking them questions like, oh, where were you when you first heard the announcement? They're saying, oh, I was at home. One lady actually fell for it when she was asked the question. So what do you think about his willingness to now give hand over North Dakota in return to North Korea?
Wow.
So, unfortunately, some of these Americans, like I say, being insular, they're very, very gullible.
I really
as well.
Hope that was just because she was on the spot and just said anything that came to mind.
Yeah. I think a lot of them like their 15 seconds of fame, so they just
do.
Run with it.
Yep. Yeah.
Speaking of getting things wrong, too, when I was over in the States, I sat next to a lady at a cafe and she said to me, where are you from? And I said, Australia. And then she turned to her friend and she said, oh, she's from Austria. And I'm like, oh, wow, not at all.
Oh, I had a few. I remember when we were telling some, well, we had some Americans say, oh, yeah, we want to come down under. We're gonna fly to New Zealand and drive to Australia.
No, you can't be serious. Look, thanks for a great podcast this morning. And to our listeners, have a fabulous weekend. And we'll speak to you all again next week.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks.
Bye.
You've been listening to this week's episode of The Investor Exchange. To access this episode's show notes, go to theinvestorexchange.com.au and follow us on Facebook at The Investor Exchange for updates on our latest episodes. This show is for entertainment and educational purposes only. Before making any investment decision, contact United Global Capital by emailing ugc.net.au for a personalised, no-cost, no-obligation financial strategy consultation. Or alternatively, email us at info@ugc.net.au.